Okay, it is 8:15, and we are going to begin the Golf Course Finance Committee meeting. I do have a proposal. Originally, you were recording. I think we are, yeah. Originally, because we were meeting with the attorneys at 7, in the event that the attorneys, that the discussion would have to be fresh and we didn't want to lose anything, I moved directly into the legal discussion before public comment. But I think after the discussion with the attorneys, I think I would propose that we move the public comments back up to the front. Anybody second that?
I'll second.
All agreed? Any disagree? Okay. So we'll begin the meeting with public comment. We will allow 15 minutes or so, 3 minutes per comment for anyone who would like to comment, and we'll open that up right now. I want to hear from the young man in the hat. I don't care what you have to say. It's going to be good. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll jump up here real quickly. Darren Louder. First, just thank you, all of you, for putting in hours and hours for this issue. There are so many technical things you're going to talk about and go over, and we could review them all day long. But at the end of the day, I just don't want to go back on any kind of deal that would upset a third of our residents. I just can't see making a third of our city unhappy about something as obvious as this. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. And Darren, thank you for telling your name when you got up. If you please would do that, give us your name and your address. That would be great.
Eric Johnson, 9992 North, 4000 West. As most know, I'm the former city attorney, and I just wanted in a public forum to repeat something that I've said in non-public forums, and that is simply this. Since I started representing the city back in 2005, it has been my observation that every city council person that has been elected has wanted to reduce the financial burden on the citizens of Cedar Hills. They have very carefully looked at over the years how to do that with respect to the golf course. When it comes to the golf course and reducing the financial burden on the citizens of Cedar Hills, that it hasn't been an issue that there's been any disagreement by council members. They all wanted to do that. There, of course, can be discussion about the best way to reduce that financial burden, but every single one of them has. I don't even know who everyone is still running for city council upcoming, but I would be stunned if they don't all feel the same way, because that's just very universal. I can say this, that in the past, in open and public meetings, past city councils have concluded that the least financial burden related to the golf course on the citizens of Cedar Hills would be to continue operating the golf course rather than doing something different with that property. And so, to my knowledge, that's why it has continued to operate. Every possibility that those councils could think of, that staff could think of, as ways to reduce the financial burden with respect to the golf course was explored consistently, and it just kept coming back every time that continuing to operate and maintain the golf course was the least costly financial option. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comments today? Going? There we go. See? Good.
I've been a proud supporter of the golf course for many years. I've been here since 2010. I'm Nate Rasband. I'd be really sad to see this golf course go. It's been a very wonderful thing for me to see every morning when I've woken up. It's been a very wonderful thing for me to see here. That was one of the positive things I looked on when I moved here, so it would be really sad for it to disappear.
Thanks, Nate. When did you move here?
2010.
Mike Geddes, 9644 Winchester Drive. I just want to briefly again thank you guys
Hope we can wrap it up one of these days and get some recommendations back to City Council, and looking forward to your recommendations. So thanks again for your time, Chairman, and everybody that's participating here. I did want to just say a couple things that have come up recently. You know, this, although we call this the Golf Course Finance Committee, it's really not about finances, and I think we've learned over the course of 7 weeks now that it's really more than just finances, and there's a lot of emotions, you know, with the way things have gone. And, you know, I want to publicly thank Rob for what he's doing. And like I said, I've always been in his camp for what he does. I disagree vehemently with his proposals, but I think it's fine to vet the ideas, and ideas are free, and let's discuss them, figure them out. But I wholeheartedly support the continued use of our golf course for open space, green space. There could be other uses for St. Andrews in the future other than, you know, my opinion, it should go back to par 5, hole number 15. But other than that, you know, I propose there could be some winter activities and things. I mean, we could build soccer fields there. I mean, there's things the city could have. I'm totally against just selling it for more houses. I'm a builder and developer. You know, that's my business. But I think there's enough houses, and we don't have enough open space that we can preserve for our future generations, our children and their children. And I'm totally on board with that. So thanks again. I would like to point out that what's often brought up is information from the past was misleading. And I wasn't on the city council. I read all the issues back in the day. I voted for the golf course in the day. All I can say is information at the time is the best, is what I can tell, is the best information available. They hired best third-party consultants to come up with the information. And as it turned out, it was wrong. But in some of the stuff that Rob circulated this week, I really felt like, you know, other than the financial side, 4 of the 5 things were met with the goals of for the city buying the course. And, you know, I'm not necessarily in favor that was a great thing, but we did preserve open space. We did preserve an amenity for the community. And I honestly agree with former city attorney Eric Johnson. Going forward, we just need to make this a better course and get more rounds played. Because I played this afternoon, it's beautiful. And Brian and Greg and Wade and the 17 other people that are employees of our city that work there do a hell of a job. And they need to be commended because they work on a tight budget. We don't pay these guys excessively. And they do a good job, so thanks.
Hello, I'm Derek Rains. I live at 10808 North La Costa. That's Craig Frank's old house, if anyone knows who that is. Craig Frank wants it. So, but the house that I bought specifically was because it was on the golf course. That was the main reason I bought it. It was vacant for a really long time, but to me, that was the main value to it. So I'm also the guy that gets the Rams that kept hitting the backyard and the Cedars, and they busted through the window. But in my opinion, I'd much rather have Rams than, like, kids in a park or, you know, bums or any of that stuff. So my opinion, for what it's worth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Harvey Cahoon, 4122 Hayes Circle. I don't live on the golf course. I don't golf. I hate it. So I don't have anything to do with golfing. A little white ball whacking it around to me is insane. However, I think the golf course and this facility, which is an offshoot of it, is a tremendous advantage for our city. It seems to me that it would be tragic to lose it. I don't have a whole lot more to say. I don't know exactly what you guys are doing tonight. Just got word that you're meeting. But I think it would be a tragedy for Cedar Hills to lose its golf course.
Thank you. Any other public comment?
I got one that I can make for somebody else.
Sure. Who's it for?
Jared Osmond.
So Jared Osmond wasn't going to be able to make it tonight because he's coaching a team, but he emailed me this afternoon and said, asked me to read this for him during public comment. He says, Rob, I just wanted to reach out to you and express my feelings on the golf course. Obviously, there are strong ties and emotions for people that purchase their homes adjacent to the golf course and want that to stay the way it is. I completely respect that. I wish this could be a citywide vote since each citizen is paying for that luxury. No one wants to say anything because of the backlash. As a business owner, it makes no sense to run a negative numbers like we are in Cedar Hills, over $500,000 a year in subsidies with no regard to the fact that this is just bad form. I know it's a heated and charged issue, but be aware of that. As a developer, this would be a very enticing piece of ground. Developers deal with issues all the time on land. It is possible to create open green spaces and amazing neighborhoods without detracting from the beauty of Cedar Hills. For example, in the Highland area, I would do 1+ acre lots and create a massive and beautiful estate lot subdivision, something that is intertwined with big open green spaces and amenities. I would have no problem paying the amount of the bond plus cost the city incurs to get the deal done for the entire piece. In fact, I think that might be underpriced. Anyone in the development world would understand the value of being in an amazing place like Cedar Hills. This is my backyard, and my friends live here. I'm not out to tick anybody off, but I am concerned if the people sitting on the city council don't really believe that this would sell for the amount of the bond. Certainly, there could be some amazing development, and there would be several buyers that would step up to participate. I'm not a golfer, so I don't care about the golf course, but I do care about property value, and there certainly are ways to mitigate the loss of property value for those that are along the golf course. This is my opinion. I'm sure I'll catch flack for stating it. There's a lot of immaturity going on when we talk about the golf course, and the backbiting and fighting is almost unbearable to read online. It fascinates me how people treat each other. Anyway, you have my 2 cents on the deal. I wish you had my $5 million plus on the deal because it would be a done deal.
Is he offering $5 million plus on the deal? Is that what you said? Is that what he said?
Sound like it.
No, there you go. Yeah,
that's right.
Does anybody else have public comment today? Okay, all right, going. Gone. you're scaring me though. You're stopping me all the time. Gone. All right. We met previously with the attorneys and discussed legal issues. And they gave us a document that has a lot of information for us to go over. We can take some time to discuss that here today, if that is everybody's want. But I suspect no matter what we do, we're going to want to go over and look carefully over the document and begin to create our FAQ from it. Does that make sense? But I will open it up for discussion about legal issues. I know that Trent had a few that he felt that the committee should look to as well. So we can point to him or anyone who would like to bring up a question legal first or a comment.
I would just add that we were given the document during our meeting, and certainly none of us have really had a chance to read it, let alone digest it, contemplate it, mull it over, all sorts of things. So I would suggest we do so. And then I know we're trying to end this committee meeting.
But we
still have work to do.
We have work to do. And I think this got us a long way towards. I think this is fantastic. So thank you for taking our money. That, on behalf of the mayor, can I say that? It was good. So we're excited for that.
So my suggestion would be is we do read that and mold over in a subsequent meeting. Ascertain which portions of it we would like to use in our FAQ.
Okay, and we can still come back and discuss some of the legal issues around the golf course then. So I propose that we move on to discuss Rob Crawley's Plan B that he has. Anybody second that? So we'll turn some time over to Rob to make his pitch.
Is this the document that you received?
I'm going to see. I think yes. I printed some out.
Yes. I printed them out, but I just, that is what we're going to cover. Okay.
No, I have not changed anything at this point. I probably will because I've had some good feedback online and from people individually, so I probably will change some of it, but I didn't want to change it until we reviewed it as a committee. And
I've got some bad printer issues.
Oh, no.
Well, I thought I had it all here, but I may have to...
You can look at my computer
if
you'd
like. I may have it on myself as well.
I want to I guess I want to start out by saying that I planned an option B on purpose, trying to make it so that it didn't run into legal issues as much as possible. So I'd had asked a lot of questions of the attorneys beforehand and tried to get comfortable that it wouldn't be breaking any rules for the city, or there would be things in place that would make it legal or in every way possible. And so that's where the holes 13 through 15 came about, and also have the least impact on neighborhoods. So there's a lot of things that are advantageous to selling enough to pay off the bond with the sale that happened. So it was planned that we would find some land that could be sold for enough to pay off the bond and take care of the bond all at once, so there's not any legal or other issue, or IRS issues or any other issues when that happens. So the two plots of land that affect Cedar Hills residents the least that I could find were first Highland City property, which is holes 1 through 9. No Cedar Hills residents live bordering that property.
Is 10 not included?
No. 10 is in Cedar Hills, so we'd keep that. And then holes 13 through 15, which is the east side of Canyon Road. And we'd already decided as a city at one time that we were going to sell part of the property that goes up against Canyon Road, which would make it so that if we did that, then you wouldn't see part of the holes anyway. So it would not take out, the problems that come about with selling 13 through 15 would be a lot less than if you sold parts that were bordering houses and such. There still are some houses right on the south end of that 13 through 15 area, but those were the two least objectionable properties that we could sell for enough to pay off the bond and still, I guess I should say, just enough to pay off the bond. And that would be a major hurdle, making sure we paid off the bond. And that was one of my motivations for putting this together. Now, I wanted to compare two options. And as a city councilman, I will say that I always feel like the city should have options. So whenever there's service providers or anything like that, I've been very consistent that we always get two or three quotes, because I don't want anyone just serving the city that might be a higher priced one just because they know somebody or because we've used them in the past. I always believe that we should have options. So what motivated me a lot is I kept hearing that we don't have any option but keep doing the golf course, and I feel like whenever people said that, there's always options. And so I wanted to see what options there were and see if there's anybody in the city that wanted to pursue any other option. And so the first option I put together, the first option obviously is keep the golf course. So option A. So here's what I put together to explain option A. Number one, keep running the golf course. Two, continue to look for ways to decrease the subsidies from the residents. Three, sell St. Andrew's Estates lots east of Canyon Road. Four, continue to have residence taxes subsidize the bond debt and the golf course. And the advantages of this option A were there's less effort and less short-term trauma to the city. Those that have bought homes in the Cedars will not have unexpected changes to the area surrounding their homes. And three, those that enjoy having a golf course in Cedar Hills will continue to enjoy the golf course. And those are big things to me. The cons, the debate, bait and anger over the golf course would not likely go away for many years to come. And the residents will continue to subsidize the course. And as long as there's residents subsidizing the course, I suspect there'll be residents unhappy with it. The other con, the city would continue to be short on park space for their recreational programs. It's been told to me many times by people in our rec programs that our kids have to go to other cities to play oftentimes because we don't have enough park space. The other con is the bond payment will continue on our property taxes until approximately 2030. And number four, with the subsidy and bond payment, the residents' appetite for other city amenities will not be high. That is, it restricts other improvements to the city because people only have so much appetite for subsidies of programs in the city and taxes raising. So I want to say, too, I have been saddened by all the anger and excitement over this, but I understand it. I would have hoped that we could talk about it without getting upset and angry, but that's really hard when it does affect people the way it does. So as a city council, we have to try to look at the best for the whole city, not just
certain parts of the city. That includes both the south and the north areas. So it has been hard, but I think it's been important to discuss it. Option B summary. It's a little longer because it involves more change, so there's more issues that I have to kind of document. One, issue an RFP, request for a proposal for selling 30 acres east of Canyon Road. Two, issue an RFP, request for a proposal for selling 60 acres in Highland City. Continue golf course operations until legitimate offers are received for both properties that will pay off the bond. Sell the two plots and pay off the bond simultaneously. Continue to irrigate the maintain the remaining holes that are not sold. And use the funds that would have been spent on the golf course to enhance the remaining parks, quote unquote, that would become parks, until satisfactory. Offer to Harvey's to buy only that part of their land for the $850,000 or so currently in escrow.
I would say this, Rob. The Harvey stuff is kind of off the golf course. I mean, it doesn't. I don't think it affects what you're talking about. There's a lot of it, but age of time, maybe. I don't. If you feel like it's important, go ahead. But I wonder if the Harvey stuff is.
I think
a bigger issue beyond. Maybe you can go. No, I'm not being distracted. You do what you what you want. But
I think that
we want to. Discussed.
There might be one or two more sentences on it, but yeah. In a nutshell, we have a plan to buy a large amount of land next to Deerfield. We may not want to buy that much land if we had all this park space already. So that may save us some money. Number eight, allow residents who border the golf course the option to buy additional land into the golf course area at the lowest legal price possible, up to 1/5 of an acre, you know, up to some amount, doesn't matter how much, to try to help alleviate some of the downside to those that live right on the border of these new park areas if we did it. Zone sellable land in Cedar Hills, holes 13, 14, 15 for larger lots to satisfy green space requirements, make it upper end development rather than small homes close together. Separate from the current decision would be a future decision about whether to convert hole 10 into a cemetery or a park or whatnot. But there'd be a lot of options on that, on hole 10, which is down in the river area. The pros of option B are approximately, according to my calculations, and we'll go over those too if we have time, approximately $4.8 million in savings over the next 20 years of the life of the bond. And another pro is rather than a golf course that residents have to pay for, there would be parks that residents can use for free. The debate over the golf course would end, bringing more peace to the city. Of course, it wouldn't end quickly. You know, there'd be people that would be upset for a while, but there wouldn't be any debate over whether we should have a golf course anymore. With $3 million of planned improvements on the land, there could be additional features such as playgrounds, pavilions, soccer fields, etc. There would be enough soccer field space that our city wouldn't have to go over to other cities to host soccer games. The city could consider other features that it wanted to add to our budget without taxes becoming out of line with other cities. Separate from the current decision would be a future proposal about whether to convert hole 10 into a cemetery. The cons, the debate over the future of the golf course would temporarily intensify. And we've experienced some of that already. The Harvey Park in the south end of the city would be smaller in exchange for larger park areas in the north area of the city. This is cons, by the way. There would be more land developed on the east side of Canyon Road in addition to the planned St. Andrews Estates. So it would be another 20 acres in addition to the 10 acres on St. Andrews that would be developed. That's a con to a lot of people to have more of the mountainside covered with homes. For although there's no obligation to the city to subsidize the golf course indefinitely, the city could have to defend itself against potential litigants. And five, the notoriety of having a beautiful golf course would not be there for Cedar Hills, or the draw of the golf course would not be there for Cedar Hills, and that's a con. So that's kind of the narrative, and then I went into the financial aspects. And the first page of my analysis, and I will publish this eventually, and there's, you know, I'm sure people will have disagreements with it, but I will try to actually make a range so that one range is the low end, one range is the high end, and kind of see what range we're in. But option A.
Question on format here.
Yes.
Yeah. Been holding back. We just
I think you're right.
Okay.
No, I don't.
I think we should let him say what he wants to say.
I guess that's true.
And then we.
I agree. I don't know how you again how much detail of the spreadsheets you want to go through.
There's only so much you can say about a bond amortization schedule.
Bring it on, brother.
Not to misunderstand, I'm fine going through whatever level of detail we want. I'm just
at some point, right, we need to discuss because many of the things we've already covered, I think, I personally
The remaining six spreadsheet tabs, I don't know, man. I love you, but I love you that much.
Yeah, I'm not
going to do what you got to do.
I'm not going to make it boring. It is boring because I'm talking and I am an accountant, so that makes it boring.
Bring it on. Okay. And we'll open it up for discussion, and there's a lot to discuss.
So, option A, I just took the cash requirements prepared by the city for the next 6 years, I believe. Let's see.
I would say this. Does anybody, I would say that not everybody, I'm not saying everybody would endorse all of your numbers as correct.
Right.
But does anybody have any interest in debating his numbers today? I don't think anybody. I think you can. I don't think anybody is interested in debating my numbers today.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay.
There are many, and I don't believe at all.
It'd be nice to hear maybe what you would put in their place and maybe consider that the other end of the spectrum, because I'm trying to get a range. So if you feel like a number should be more or less, I'd really love to hear that. So I took option A. I have a spreadsheet for option A costs and a spreadsheet for option B costs and compared them on a schedule and found that option B would be less expensive, according to my calculations, by about $4.8 million. This is over the life of the bond. And $3.1 million of that savings I show coming from just the different costs of both analyses. And then the other $1.7 million savings would be if we didn't have to do the Deerfield Park, or if we didn't have to, that's okay. Sure. So $3.1 million of the savings would just be from the difference of the two plans, and then $1.7 million would be if we decided not to buy the entire Deerfield Park area from the Harveys. Then it could be another $1.7 million savings, according to my calculations. Option A costs, the way I figured it just in a nutshell, was the cost of the bond, which is a known amount per year. I did assume that we'd pay off St. Andrew's Estates for $1.5 million on option A. So if we decided not to do that, that would add another $1.5 million to the cost of option A, which is keeping the golf course. So the bond would get paid off early and would be less expensive by that if we did sell St. Andrews. There's a subsidy each year that the first 6 years of that were taken from a report by Charles, our financial director for the city. And the rest after that was just taking about the average of the last 2 years approximately on that forecast and running that forward. Capital expenditures were taken from a spreadsheet that Charles put together for the forecast replacement costs for all the equipment for the golf course. And then I did an adjustment of $50,000 running up to $100,000 negative for that option, just in case I missed something, which is $1.8 million. And there is some expenses in there that I know would go down over time. So that's probably fair to put that number in there, about $100,000 per year savings off of that we just can't explain right now entirely. Some might be explainable, but some isn't. So that makes it, in my mind, conservative, and as an accountant, I like to be conservative, especially if we're looking at a major change. You want to stick with the current plan unless there's really good reason to change. And so putting in that other adjustment negative expense column, I feel, takes care of that. That's option A, how I figured option A costs. And I will put this out there so that people can look at it and critique it. And the only thing I ask is that you do it nicely and that I, in return, will make some changes to it and have different plans and say, here's what I originally had. Here's what some people felt that we could change and make it a better plan or whatnot, or reflect it more accurately. Like if someone said there's no way we could build parks for that amount, then I'd say, okay, well, let's look and see what it would take to build a park at a higher amount. Maybe someone could help me put together estimates that are better. So option B, costs. They take into account that if we if we did it, it would probably take 3 years before anything major happened anyway, because we wouldn't want to do it without a vote of the people. I wouldn't vote for it as a city council person this year without the people actually showing me that they want that, because that's a major change. I would vote no on the city council without some indication that it was the right thing to do, and I guarantee that the other four on the city council probably would feel at least the same way, probably more so. So the first 3 years would be doing everything we plan on the golf course. Starting in 2019, I show costs for upgrading the parks at $400,000 per year to be spent on the parks areas. That I've had questions asked of where would we come up with that money, and the answer to that is we would have the bond paid off, so we could have a temporary tax equal to the amount of the bond for several years until we got the parks where we wanted them. That's one answer. Another answer would be that we could put another bond out there and do the golf or go do the parks really quickly, upgrade them all quickly, and have another bond. That's another option. And if we did spend $3 million on the park, which I'll go through those costs quickly in a little bit, then that would be some savings there. But a lot of the savings to Plan B is that the cost of maintaining the golf course areas that are currently green space is more and has proven to be more than it would cost to maintain parks at that same the same level of irrigated areas. Would be less money to maintain, and that's where a lot of the cost savings come from. I do have some bond amortization schedules. I'm just going to skip through those. That is my expertise in my job is putting together amortization schedules. I do it all the time for potential deals like this. So if someone wants to contest me on those, they can feel free to do it. But I put together a bond amortization schedule based on if we stay how we are. One, if we do option A, which is sell a portion of the St. Andrews Estates and pay off $1.5 million of that early, it makes a whole different outcome on the bond that we'd pay it off 5 years early if we did St. Andrews Estates. And the last one was bond amortization if we option B, which would be paying it off early, and it shows what the payments would be up until we paid it off. The golf course areas, I have a spreadsheet for that shows from my best estimates, some of it, sometimes the city's information had two holes, the area for two holes combined as one. So I didn't know exactly, like, for instance, in hole four and hole five, I didn't know exactly how much of acres were irrigated versus how many acres there were, but based on the yardage of the hole, I could estimate about the right amount. But overall, it gets to the right amount based on the city's publications of how many holes are irrigated and how many acres there are per hole. And just through that, I was able to estimate the irrigated amounts of the golf course. I have them starred. And Plan B would be keeping all the Cedar Hills areas irrigated except for 13 through 15, and that comes to about 25 acres of irrigated space. A lot of our golf course, especially if you go look at it, you'll see there's a lot of weed area next to the irrigated space, you know, kind of as a buffer between the homes and the irrigated part of the golf course. There is a lot of land there that's not irrigated. And so my proposal is that we keep irrigating everything that's been irrigated, keep watering, mowing, and all that. And the cost to do that per acre is about $4,600. And we pay about $3,000 a year per acre to the maintenance company that we deal with. And then Charles has estimated about $1,600 more per acre in overhead and different costs, tree trimming, different things like that that we pay. So $4,600 per acre is the best estimate I have. And my estimate is it costs about $93,000 to maintain per year that amount of green space. So that's part of the calculation going forward of what cost it would be to maintain the parks. The park improvements.
Maybe we should pull back on some detail. A little bit of detail.
Okay. We're almost done, and I'll shut up for a while. The parks, I used a quotation we got for developing the Bay Hill Park, and it has very detailed out what the cost of each of the amenities are there. And I considered that quote the low end because it's a small park. So we'd have a smaller playground, a smaller parking lot, a smaller restroom, smaller pavilion than if we had those same amenities in our other parks. So the cost there on a small park would, I would estimate, you know, bare bones $465,000 if we didn't do hardly any changes, just put in these small amenities. But I don't think anyone would be happy with that. So I put a medium and a high range of what we'd want to do with golf courses, and I upped the amount that we'd be spending if we wanted a medium nice golf park or a high grade park. And so the medium came out to about $785,000 that I show, you know, putting a little bit more into all the different amenities that we would have. And then on the high end, close to $1.1 million per park area. And so holes 11 and 12 would be about $785,000 we'd put into it. Holes 16 and 17, about $785,000. And hole 18 and the range, I put that we'd spend $1 million on it. And a lot of the increase would be regrading. We'd certainly want to have an area big enough to have sports programs on. And there's a lot of level spots, but they're not quite level enough for sports. So you'd have to send equipment in there to level it off, and you'd have to redo some of the piping and things like that either went too far below the ground or you cut off as you graded. So part of the plan would be to pick the most level area of each park and have that be for sports. And then so that is a lot of the increased cost that I show. And then the last part that I explained was Harvey Park savings. That just as a background, we have some escrow funds of $850,000 set aside that have to be used for purchasing Harvey Park or some land for a park in the area. If we did this, we wouldn't want, in my opinion, others may disagree, I don't think we'd want to buy quite as much land over there for Deerfield Park from the Harveys, because we'd have a lot of park space close by. Some people may differ, but this is the plan B that I've put together. So I show that we'd probably purchase a little less than half of what we originally planned, and that would reduce the acres that we had to take care of there, as well as the land development. Some of the development we do for the park there, we could use for developing the other parks. And so back to the original proposal, it would save about $4.8 million if we did decide that we didn't want to develop St. Andrew's Estates. Then that number would go to $6.3 million savings if we did this. If we didn't want to sell that part in option A, and so the option B would be selling all 30 acres there versus option A of not selling any acres, then that would put it to about $6.3 million difference in savings. Of course, people have other ideas of what to do with that if we didn't sell it. Those would all cost money too. So that's plan B in a nutshell. I'll never say it's perfect. I'll say it's my best stab at it. And I'm willing to entertain any criticism at this point, as long as it's respectful, and I'll be respectful back.
Should we start with, do you want to start on the end? And if you're ready to go, David, go ahead, buddy.
I'll expect answers all right now, Ron, but just things to consider with your plan. Bear with me, I have like 15 things here, so
it's going to be longer than my cousin.
With course A options, in regards to St. Andrew's Estates and the Harvey parcels that you're talking about, not using for park space, I would have you consider that should we use those for park space? We may not need to go through all the rigmarole of what's in the course to get on park space. Just a suggestion.
Can I say one thing? Let's not go through all 15. Let's give, a lot of people are dying to help on this one. I'm sure. Yeah.
So the other thing is, we talked about continuing to subsidize the bond. Obviously the bond has to get off no matter what the use is for. And you talk about there'll be less trauma, short-term trauma to the city and less anger and such, but that really goes both ways. I mean, the people that are opposed to the golf course can also elect to be less angry about the situation, I would suggest. You talk about the selling off those parcels. I just was wondering how many holes we have left on the golf course after we sell a Highland parcel and the San Andreas parcel? How much of a golf course there left?
Seven.
So you have a seven-hole golf course.
Six.
Six?
Seven.
12 holes sold.
Nine plus. Six, yeah. Simple math.
Okay. So I'm sorry, six or seven?
Six, yeah, six.
So a six-course golf course.
Mm-hmm. Golf course. No, we have six parks that look like a golf
course. Okay, hold on a second. So one through
nine.
Nine plus 13 through 15.
12.
So 12.
No, it's done. So I'm thinking.
Yeah, we know that.
The whole
oh yeah, plus oh yeah, 10. Really, that's right. We're adding 10 because it goes into become a cemetery.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
I just want to make sure you understand that when you talk about selling these parcels, we're really talking about holes in the golf course.
Absolutely. No,
I just want to make sure that's
that one.
You mentioned that you've set aside or thought at $1 million would be a good number for legal fees. How'd you come up with that number?
I just have not seen anyone that would have standing to fight against it if the city was doing what the best thing it thinks is, and I would never suggest that we do anything illegal. I just don't see that with standing you'd have legal fees in excess of that. I actually think the legal fees could be very, very minimal.
What would you base it on?
Well, let's give an example. So let's say we did allow this development to come in, and some residents weren't happy with that. The city wouldn't do it if it was illegal, and the residents that border this development south of Walmart, you know, they could sue just as well as anyone else could sue with anything that they're mad at the city about. But if you don't have standing, it's a lot easier to defend against it. That's what we saw.
You mentioned that we would continue to maintain the remaining holes and irrigate them and such. Just wondering why.
Because they're going to be parks.
That's the park space.
Right.
Okay. One of the concerns I have in the plan for issuing RFPs and trying to find two simultaneous buyers so we can pay off the bond simultaneously is the impact on revenue for the course in regards to finding to sell events. And if I was a corporation trying to find a place for my summer golf event next summer, I probably wouldn't schedule to see the hills because I'm not a golf course a year. So I don't know if you've included any loss of revenue in your.
How much? So we have about $700,000 a year in revenue. How much do you personally think would we lose if there was an RFP?
That's the point, right?
Right.
We don't know, right? So I'm just you throw an estimate for legal expenses. Maybe you should throw an estimate of lost revenue for.
I think that's valid.
Uncertainty.
I will add that in. I think that's valid.
I wonder, I don't know how to create this either, but you have this building that we're in right now, which some people call a golf course clubhouse and some people call an event center. So they call other things, I think, as well, along the way. I don't know what the impact on this building would be if it's no longer a golf course, it's from its marketability. So I have some concern around that. In regards to your numbers, I'm not a finance wizard, but I do have some concern that throughout a lot of your numbers, you talk about estimates. A lot of your columns are labeled estimates. And estimates are like projections, right? I mean, they're just a number that you're estimating, right? And I know you're basing it on something, but I think it's hard to deal with actual numbers that have been audited versus estimates and projections. And a moment ago, during the dialogue, you talked about, I love to have people, you know, show me where I'm wrong, the question of more or less, whatever people feel it should be. You know, I don't think we should base anything based on what people feel it should be. So I just have concern around some of the projections. I don't want to fall in the same trap that you criticized our earlier, founding fathers of Cedar Hills, but way back, right? Where they
Was it you that suggested we do a range? Online, it seemed like someone said if we do a range, we might avoid that. Someone would suggest that. I can't remember. Okay.
Anyway, so I just worry about the word estimate projections and making good decisions based on that. And then even adjusting them based on people feel. You said people getting the feedback put out there can change the range based on people feel. I just don't think that's a very appropriate way to go around it.
Right.
Yeah, last thing I'll say, and probably not the last thing for a moment, is. Again, if we would use St. Andrews Estates and Harvey, and people who live on the south end of Cedar Hills, where I live, would actually like to have a park down there.
from the quarter today when we have a park down there on that side of town. So taking that park away from us, just so people on the other end of town can have even bigger parks, is a concern to me. But if we were to use Harvey Parcel and St. Andrews as park space, we probably wouldn't need to close the course to get the soccer fields you desire or the parks you're not to build. So that's not good.
Thank you. Can I take privilege of going very quickly second and then moving down? Unless there's some this direction that want to go, we'll get that in, and then Priscilla, then we'll come back. My thought is, okay, you can look at estimates, and I think a better word I would use would be budgets, and you get what you get and you don't throw fit, right? You just say, well, I can create a, and that's why the numbers to me are less important, because I look at it and say, okay, well, this is what it costs to run a golf course, and we can debate about that. And then say, well, I can now take a number that's less than that, sell off a bunch of the course, take a number that's less than that, and then shoehorn a park system into it. Certainly it's not a, you know, where a city would sit down and say, let's make a plan for our city, something that our grandchildren would like and love. And so let's sit down and design this great park system. Instead, it becomes, well, we have a budget because the goal is it has to be less than what we were doing, or that's not a goal at all, right? So if that's the case, I think you can do it. And that's been the point of, I think, the plan you made in the first place. It can be done. You know, it can be done. I'll show you it can be done. Yeah, I believe it can be done. I think you're right. I think we can find buyers and do all kinds of things. I may be wrong, but I think it can. Certainly the bond will be paid off, someone mentioned before, and then we can do it for sure. There's no bond to pay off. You could always do something down the road. But what the poison pill is for me is that if we take 12 holes, let's take the first 9 holes. That's the one that kills me the most. I look at that land as what we own, right? We own that land. It's in Highland, so we don't have a lot of control over, you know, over what the regulations of that land are, but we own that land. And I feel like it's a part of Cedar Hills. And I think this plan too easily lines off that 9 holes and says, we're going to allow it to return to junk. And we have a path going through it. We can't build anything on it. We can't control what anybody does with it. The most likely outcome to me that I can see is that it will just be an abandoned golf course. 9 full holes, 50% of the golf course, an abandoned golf course to me for the foreseeable future. And then if someone did buy it and they wanted to farm it or whatever, there's no roads that get to it. It's landlocked. Can't get to it. They'd find a way to get there. There's no compulsion for them to farm or cultivate or control that entire property. They may do something on little pieces of it or just hang on to it for 20 years until they feel like the land goes up or Highland loosens its strictures or a new city council. And to suggest that that's going to be a beautiful, nice amenity for the city anymore, it's not. And a lot of this has been, well, the golf course has been, it's a place where kids can't go out and play. You have to pay to play on the golf course. But we're talking about taking more than 50% of the golf course, 12 of the 18 holes, and making them restricted space that children can't go play on. Where someone had said, just imagine children playing on that grass. It won't happen. It's going to be an abandoned 9 holes that's private property. No one's going to be playing on it. They can't. I look at those 9 holes as property that I see and interact with and live with in my end of the city more than the East End. I know that who live on the East End, that it'd be very troubling to see what would happen up above, but I identify with that down there. And as a citizen, I care a lot about the Walmart. I care a lot about the high-density housing. This is a huge poison pill, far bigger than any Walmart issue, far bigger than any high-density housing issue. This is a significant negative change for our city, all to pay off, I don't know, to do what? To pay down a bill that we may end up blowing out of the water with some amenity that we can't afford someplace else. So I look at it and say, okay, great, this is plan B, but plan B is not taking this beautiful land we own and making a sane redevelopment project that a city could love and use. It is abandoning portions of it, selling lots, making it, you know, this and that, all for the purpose of paying down a bond and then just taking on golf courses or taking on city parks that are awash
You know what I'm saying? So to me as a citizen, I don't know, I would just say, oh my gosh, I think the best use of holes 1 through 9 is a golf course. There's no question to me that the best use of holes 1 through 9 is a golf course. I can't imagine, unless the city council in Highland flips over, as I think Mr. Osmond said, he thinks he can get them to allow him to develop houses there, is what he's saying. And you know what? If he can, well, then that's lame too. Because now we've taken our beautiful open space and we've built a bunch of stupid houses on them. I hope he's wrong. So anyway, if that's what you're proposing, if looking at options means abandoning 9 holes, developing a bunch of other holes, losing a bunch of space, and then making parks that no sane city developer would ever create, then yes, your plan B works. But I don't know that you're going to get a significant number of people that want that plan. I don't think any city council will. I think if people running for office down the road do, they should make it known. If they're going to buy into the plan B, this is what they're buying into. It's not just, hey, we want options. It is, we want all kinds of nonsense. Okay, I've said my piece. Go ahead.
Okay, very quickly. All of your numbers, and I mentioned this to you earlier last week, time we met. All of your numbers don't actually benefit the city until close to 9 or 10 years down the road that it flips, that we actually start saving money, which means that anyone who lives in the city and doesn't stay here for at least that long doesn't benefit. And a lot of people will stay here that long. Many citizens will not. And so they're going to be here for 5 or 6 years, sell their house. They're going to have a negative impact without the golf course, but they're not financially going to benefit in their taxes because they didn't stay here long enough for your number to flip, were that to work. The second issue is that I'm concerned that all of this is based on a hope that we can sell the property and sell it for the amount that will pay off the bond. There is nothing that shows that that will happen. It is incredibly risky, in my opinion, for the city to decide that we're going to do something where we have nothing more than a hope and a prayer. And my last point is that regardless of all those numbers, and we haven't addressed it at this point, but there are an enormous number of legal roadblocks that could be overcome, but will have to be overcome. We can't just ignore them simply because there seems to be a financial option B that might work.
Thank you. Do you have an answer for that, Rob, or are we moving on to next?
Well, if we did bond for the golf course, there would be cost savings immediately because I don't think we'd have to bond as much as the golf course would be. So we could do that and we'd have immediate savings from a lower bond amount. But there would be immediate savings also because the amount to maintain the land of the irrigated property is less than the subsidy on the golf course has been in the past and looks like it will be for the next few years. So
there would be irrigation costs would save us on that.
Right. And bond costs. There'd be two savings.
Mark Webb, you ready? Do you have comments?
I am, if he's not.
Oh, I did have one more response to that, too, and that was that most of the legal roadblocks have been avoided by the way I set up the plan or have been avoided by the way we handled St. Andrew's Estates. Most of the roadblocks have been cleared already legally.
If not all.
Can I ask you which ones you think remain? It's in most, but you do recognize that there's still some.
I'm trying to think of any, and I actually, I would ask you guys if you think any remain. I would say no. You guys,
they all remain.
I would say we should read the legal document we were provided 2 hours ago, and then form an opinion.
Paying off the bond is a roadblock. We'd have to get enough money to pay that off by someone buying it. That is definitely a roadblock that remains, and so that's the most significant one I see.
They all remain. They have to be overcome. It isn't that they can't be. It's whether they should be, is the question, I suppose. Rob, go ahead, my friend.
I have several concerns with Plan B, but let me take it maybe from a different angle. And I brought this concern up before, and I think it's valid. The purpose in you going through this exercise, I believe, was to put something together that you could put out to the citizens, right? Mm-hmm. And I believe you're still advocating a vote on your Plan B at some point. Is that fair?
I would support it. If no one is excited enough about it to bring it up to put it to a vote, then I'm happy to let it die too.
Well, here's why I'm not excited. And I know that others are advocating a vote on, or at least a few. And again, I brought this up 2 weeks ago and 3 weeks ago. One of the reasons we're here is because of the claims of misrepresentation 12 years ago or whenever it was originally voted on, right? The facts weren't presented, or there were numbers presented, there were estimates presented that didn't come to fruition. Is that right?
Yeah, and then after that, it seemed like there was continuing things that were a little bit misrepresented,
right?
Like we're operationally profitable. Just it seems like we've never been given a good, fair option with the accurate information.
Yeah, I'll give you that for right now. Mm-hmm. But my concern is, and I don't know how you would present this in a vote, if you would give them this document that you presented to us with all of these numbers, but I don't know how you could present something to the citizens to vote on with numbers that are estimates, that are speculative. Because the minute those change, the minute you don't get the money that you want out of the sell of the course or part of the course, or the minute the costs are higher than you projected to develop it, or the minute the legal fees go beyond what your projections are, you're in that same boat. And I, for one, there are many reasons I don't want to support Plan B, but I would never put my name on this because I don't want to be 10 years from now lumped into those that misrepresented the facts in 2015. And so that's my biggest concern, is how do you present something to a vote when it's based on speculation, estimates, and they may be close, but the minute they change, we have an issue. So that's my biggest concern.
One difference, is it okay? One difference with Plan B over the golf course, one big difference is a lot of the costs can be controlled by the city council. If we want to put in a restroom that costs $75,000, we'd vote on it. If we wanted to put in a restroom that's $125,000, we'd vote on it. That's controllable, whereas shortfalls from a business venture, as hard as you may try and as hard as you all put your business sense into it, we've tried for 10 years or plus, and we haven't figured out how to stop the losses and stop the subsidies.
But when you're
putting together a park, you decide as a city and as residents how nice you want this to be and how much you want your taxes to be in it. So it's very much controllable, whereas it's not with a business venture.
How about the legal ramifications, though? How do you quantify that? How do you know now what could happen, and how are you going to present that to the city?
Yeah, and I accurately. Because it is legal issues, I gave the answer I wanted to give earlier, and I'm just going to stick with that one. Yeah.
Can I address the business thing again? Because I've heard it twice. And if this were a business for me, the business would be collecting taxes and then providing amenities for citizens. There isn't any, you can't carve up a city and say, okay, well, you know, the baseball diamond is not making money. We've been down this 100 times. But if you want to take a business analogy, that's fine. If we're bringing in less taxes, or if our prices are too high, if our tax burden is too high, and we're spending more than we're bringing in, then we have a bad business model. But for a city, you're providing goods and services to citizens for the tax dollars they bring in. So as far as I'm concerned, the business is fully functional and doing well, last I've seen. Now, you can say that these are goods and services that maybe all the citizens don't want. They prefer other goods and services. But this idea that there's some business going on here, it isn't a fair analogy, in my opinion.
I think what started that was the original reason for having it, where people said it'll make money.
It
but I'm with
stupid
you.
Stupid people in the past don't make it any better today.
But I'm with you. It really is, what do the residents want? Whether they have parks or they rather have a golf course, and I'm okay with either one once we know what the consensus is.
Let me reiterate.
Actually, you just addressed one of the questions that I had. So I guess for me...
Go ahead, Brent.
So thanks. I'm sorry. Just for me, the concern is, as others have mentioned, the risk of the sale getting enough, the risk of unmet expectations combined with the amount of sacrifice. Can it be done? I agree. It's feasible. The question is, you know, sacrificing the lower 8 or 9 holes plus holes 13 through 15 plus
half or more of Harvey Park. And part of that is, or the potential future Harvey Park, I should say.
They like Deerfield.
But the point there being, how much are we giving up of the open space relative to how much we are gaining? And it's true that there may be some financial gains, but at the same time, there may be enough utility that the residents give to that open space that they wouldn't necessarily want to give it up. At the same time, in the long term, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, as the bond is paid off, the city may want to look at things again, look at options at that time, without having to hurdle, get over that $5 million hurdle that would require selling so much land. So all I'm saying is, it may be feasible, it may be more feasible at a different time. And this just may not be the time to really consider it. That's all I'm saying. It may be, but it may not be because of those considerations. Thanks.
Can
Mr.
you
Chairman?
Oh, sorry, go ahead. Yeah, Gary, go
can
ahead.
Can I say something?
Yes, you can.
So I think you touched on a really important thing, which is that one thing I've learned in government is that government does sometimes what the private sector either can't or won't do. And so Mr. Crawley is absolutely right that a decade or so ago when our city got into the golf course business, there was the perception that it could someday be profitable. And that hasn't proved true. However, in the process of getting into the golf course business, you have a very large community that built their lives around the concept of being around a golf course. So, because the business model that the golf course was built on has not been accurate so far, and may never be, does that mean that you do another wrong thing by totally ignoring a group of citizens that built their lives and their futures around a golf course? Because I've heard you say, you know, several times about the commercial development that we should really listen to the people that are closest to the commercial development. But I don't think you're listening to the people in the Cedars. And so I hope you do. But that's why I've always said that there's legal problems with this, there's financial problems, and there's political problems, and they're all important. Not just the financial problems, because I know you focus in on that. But there's also the legal and there's also the political problems that, you know, when people buy a home and expect a certain, and they have a certain expectation to be around a golf course or something like that, and that's totally ruined, then we need to really take that seriously. And I hope that we do. So continue on.
I think to add to that question a little bit, we have to consider, and that's, I don't think there's anything wrong with considering all of this, but what we have to consider is, if let's just say that 51% of Cedar Hill's population wanted to close the golf course, does that really make it the right thing to do? Yeah, and I don't think there is. You know that I feel that way. I feel like there is no real. There's some people who have been involved in this in a long time, and they care a lot. And other people might be passive about it. But let's just assume that 51% of the people don't want a golf course, considering everything we've talked about. Again, we're people who have made home buying decisions, who have moved into the city, who have lived in this area around it. Is it right if that's the case to do it anyway? Is that justification enough? If you lived in a community, for instance, that had maybe a 10% African American population, and they wanted a community center in their city, but 90% of the population said, "I don't want an African American community center. I don't want to pay for it." Would it be right in that situation? You know, see what I'm saying? That's obviously a loaded situation, but that's the point I'm kind of making. Is there something that to be said about this, that there is an extremely interested, extremely involved group of people whose lives are more seriously impacted by it than perhaps someone whose passive preference somewhere else is there? Do you still feel at that point that a 51, as a committee, I should say, that a 51% city vote would weigh more than someone who perhaps is more damaged than others?
Can I,
David?
The mayor made a point I was going to raise up as well, and that is, you know, what is the moral, ethical, kind of right thing to do? Our population has grown by 149% since the first golf course vote took place. mean, our population is, you know, more than doubled, right? People have moved here. Many moved here, comments made tonight, and other nights people moved here to buy a golf course. Is it the right thing to do to yank that away and say, you know, I know you moved here to buy a golf course, but we're going to make it something else. It might be a house, it might be a park, it might be a parking lot for the playground, those sorts of things. And then to have in Plan B, you know, $1 million set aside for legal fight to fight our very own citizens. I mean, we're asking our citizens to spend a similar amount of money, I imagine. I imagine their lawyers probably cost a similar amount of money. So now we're asking our citizens to spend $1 million to fight the city. And then you talk about how can we reduce anger, how can we have harmony in the city, but we're creating a whole new group and crop of people that will be disenfranchised, and we're also financially hurting them. We're making them spend money on lawyers. Also that we can have essentially more houses and soccer fields, in essence. So that's, I think there's some more ethical issues here as well besides the people.
I think that when we say we're making people spend money on legal and we're asking them to go and fight the city, I think that's going a little bit too far. I wouldn't be asking them to do that.
Rob, it goes with your point that says if we kill off all the enemy, we'll have peace. As long as everybody dies, then we'll have peace. That's basically what you're saying. As long as
we're getting into
win and kill them and stick a knife to their heart,
We're getting into salacious arguments now.
No, it's on your pros.
You put money in your budget for legal to fight the legal concerns. The legal concerns predominantly with our residents.
I honestly don't have those concerns like you guys do, but I put that in there for the benefit of all those that feel like that our citizens would sue us over it. I don't think they would.
Do you feel like this is primarily a numbers discussion?
No, I don't. I feel like the numbers do pan out, but I feel like this is a preference of the residents discussion.
Is it preferably a numbers discussion? Is it weighted heavily as a numbers discussion for the city?
I think it's preference. Do the residents want parks where the kids can play at it, or do they want a golf course that they have to pay to play on? And that's what a lot of it comes down to.
Hey, Rick.
Who do they prefer?
Can I make a comment?
Please.
And this might shift the discussion a little bit, which I hope it does, unless the committee agrees that we don't need to. But the value that I see in what Rob brought to the table here is, from a committee point, is let us know that there potentially are other options and there are other opinions out there. My question, as I see the value of what Rob brought, is how does that relate to our end objective to the committee? I mean, we're sitting here, we could discuss for 3 weeks straight the pros and cons of Rob's thing, but is that really what we're trying to do? I mean, I think we already talked about we're not going to endorse or not endorse a plan as a committee. That's not going to happen. So I guess my question to Rob, that I'd be curious, and I mean, I got some thoughts, but you know, in presenting this plan,
I would say I don't know that that's true. I think we are going to make a recommendation to the city council, and if Plan B is part of one of the recommendations, I think as a council, we'll each have to vote as to whether we think Plan B is one of the options in the city. So be prepared.
In past discussions we've had, what we've talked about is that what we can best do as a committee is to put the facts out there and let the citizens take these things and run with them if that's what they want to do. And I think that's kind of what Rob's saying too. So my question to Rob would be, as related to the FAQ we put out, Rob, is there anything, you know, at least in my, I always thought that we would specifically address Plan B in the FAQ. Right. You know, how do we address, say, the other side of the table in the FAQ to be fair to both sides and still just put the facts out there for the citizens to have? Is there anything specific that comes to mind as far as that goes?
I don't think we're going to address an FAQ unless people want.
No, that's what I'm saying. I didn't think we would ever address a plan being an FAQ, which is what I'm saying. Why are we going to debate it till the pros and cons at the very end? But is there other things, you know, legal, other things, specific questions that we ought to have in the FAQ that would be, you know, fair to put out to the citizens?
Other questions besides legal, you're saying?
No,
I guess I'm confused. I'm a little slow, sorry.
It might properly represent, you know, that maybe there are other alternative options, and then it's up to the citizens if they want to take
it. Well, that's how I feel. I think it is up to the residents.
Plan B in the FAQ,
exactly.
But we could.
I do think we should include Plan B in the appendix.
And I would suggest that Rob request that we have a chance to request that we have a chance to discuss Plan B in committee and have a chance to look at the pros and cons.
No, I think it was valuable. I think the value of what this brings is that, okay, there's other options, and there's probably infinitely other options that people could come up with of what this thing could be. So this isn't, there could be Plan Z all the way to whatever. I'm just saying, I think what we could provide the most value to the citizens as a committee is to try to, again, stick to the facts, get the FAQ out there, and then people can make their own plans if they want to. They can form committees. They can try to do grassroots effort, whatever they want to do, whether it's pro or con. Vote the right councilman, and, you know, it's
if we get
a citizen decision.
Okay, there's a lot of sources to fighting in the past that none of us like, and one of them is saying that the city council has never looked at everything, and I hear that they have, and that they've looked at a lot of these options, but it was behind closed doors. We've done it very publicly this time. That argument goes away. That I've heard that there's no other options besides keeping the golf course from the other side of the argument, and I think that there is other options, and that my argument might go away also. It just comes down to what we want as a community, whether we want to stay a golf course community for the long haul, or whether we want to have parks. And I think that if it went to a vote, that'd be the best thing, because then it'd be resolved, I think, once and for all at that point. But that's my opinion.
We talk about votes. Mm-hmm. What about a poll instead of a vote, just to kind of gauge? The only reason I say that is a vote might have other consequences, where a poll would simply allow the city council to get a feel for how the residents feel, and then the city council can act accordingly.
I think if it was worded very non-leading, you know, factual, and after getting all the facts out, I think that would be very informative.
I would say at the end of a very long poll is much bigger. The end of a very intense political discussion, all the facts get represented better. Like, for instance, a lot of things like the type of parks we would end up with, what would happen to holes 1 through 9. These are things in a poll that most people who haven't paid close attention can have hard time understanding. So it's fine to do, I suppose, but that's tough.
And that would almost require a planning commission. Planning to go beyond even what we've considered.
It would be. And we talked about that. And I would say this. We are moving forward pretty quick on the FAQs. With the report that we have from the attorneys, I think we can this week begin to put our FAQs together. And also the other side is the financial FAQs. The missing component really has been to give a fair hearing to Rob's plan and as a committee, you know, decide how we feel about it. And this isn't a sterile, you know, non-emotional issue that doesn't have social implications. If we don't weigh the social impact, if we only weigh the financial impact, or if we only weigh the land use impact, but we don't weigh the social impact, then what I would consider the largest part of this argument is not, or discussion or debate, is left untouched. And so you may not like always, you know, how the sausage is made, but if there isn't some pushback, then it just, I think it misses a vital component. And I don't think there's any way around it.
Right.
Yes, please.
I think the thing we have to recognize is that we don't live in a pure democracy. We live in a republic. We have representatives. Those are our city council and our mayor. So if the city council and the mayor is going to make a decision about what to do with the golf course, keep it, sell it, make parks, whatever, and Rob is an intimate part of that, being one of the representatives on the council, then they hold a public meeting. All the citizens, all 10,000, if they want to show up in the city, can come and say what they want to say and be heard, and then their representatives, who they elected, will be the ones who will make those decisions. But to say we're going to have a poll or we're going to have a vote, we don't live in a pure democracy, because it just isn't functional. And you can't ask everyone's opinion on every single thing that the city does. So our our particular task is to recommend to the city council and to the mayor what we believe is the most legitimate plan or plans for the golf course going forward, and then let them do their job as given that role in our constitution, how to function, and then the citizens can talk to them as their representatives.
And then if a citizen wants to put up an initiative, they can look
at Plan B and say,
let's put an initiative on, then
that.
There's a process for that.
Absolutely.
And everybody is happy. I agree. Mark Webb, please.
Priscilla, you got applause.
I'll applaud. Well said. So I'm going to skip because, you know, there are several specifics I could, you know, walk through in some of my questions and ideas on the specifics of plans A and B, but I'll skip that because I think, you know, as we talk through it, we've been through it a little bit before, we still recognize, I would recognize we've learned some things in this process that I think in my mind have sort of eased some of my concerns in a few legal areas. I think even after today, I think there are potentially fewer issues with respect to some aspects of it than I thought before, which I think, you know, is a good thing, perhaps in a lot of ways, and would be a good thing if you were to pursue a plan B, right? You need that. You need some things to fall your way because there is still a significant number of hurdles and potentially numerous roadblocks to go down that path. And there's more for us to read. We haven't been able to read the legal answers to all of our questions. And in addition to that, I think there's a tendency to kind of gloss over those in the discussion and that they're insignificant. And I just think that's I disagree with that mode of operating, that you can just kind of gloss over those, because I think, as Dave said earlier, there is potential for any one of those issues to rear its head and cause not only cost but time, right, and significant delay to any plan. So skipping forward a little bit, just a little thought game for a minute. If we were to pretend that your plan B is exactly right, which is a huge leap, but let's pretend for a minute that all the numbers are right and none of the hurdles exist beyond what you've budgeted for. We get to the end of that, and what have we accomplished? I don't see that we've actually accomplished anything. We may no longer have a golf course and might have a few additional parks. And in the discussion, you present a false dichotomy of let's have the citizens choose whether they want parks or a golf course. We already have both. And we even have a plan to have more parks at much less cost and much less pain than ripping the golf course out of the community. So I don't know what we gain at the end of this whole process that could last, as Priscilla said, we could be here 5-8 years living with a weed patch because we can't necessarily afford to do what we want. And you might have to live in this community for 10 years to see parks replace part of a golf course. So maybe there are a few citizens that were here long ago that feel some vindication that, hey, we killed the golf course and we're happy about it. But on the flip side, we've now angered, or at least alienated, a significant portion of the community. And not only did we not solve this thorn in our side for 10 years, this issue coming up every election cycle, we just planted a new rose bush. And so, you know, finance committee aside and you know, trying to get an FAQ out and publish information, which I think we can do. And I think how Priscilla said it is kind of exactly where it needs to go. we can publish what we can publish, and then if city council or citizens want to take, you know, tackle a plan, then tackle a plan. But let's think about the end game here. And the end game, we don't accomplish anything by going down to Plan B. I can't see any improvement that we can't accomplish otherwise. So that's how I see the big picture.
But you'd be trading land for a bond payment other than that, because you're not even really paying off a bond out of whole cloth. You're giving up a lot. And I think the cost benefit needs to be looked at.
I just have a couple of comments about that.
It was a little bit not correct, I think, how you said that. Let's assume that your plan is exactly right, then we'd be changing for parks at a much higher cost. Because if my numbers are right, we'd be changing at a much lower cost. So if you're assuming my numbers are right, then you can't say that it'd be at much. If you're assuming my numbers are right, which you first said, and then you said but we'd be switching for parks at a much higher cost, then you can't assume both of those at the same time. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Higher price, mm-hmm. Not higher cost.
Price as far as social costs.
Yes,
okay,
the
gotcha.
Price we pay to reach that goal.
I just wanted to clarify that. And then the one thing, I think a lot of it comes down to two things. One is, you are taking something away. If you take away the golf course, you're taking something away from those that value it, that live close to it. And, you know, yes, people that are far that really appreciate it too. There's golfers all throughout the city that love the golf course and people that aren't golfers too. Yeah, I've walked the city. I know this. But there are also people that are paying for it, whether they like to or not, and may not like it. Right.
I pay for every park in the city.
Right.
And I use none of them.
Really? Your kids don't play sports in any of the parks or anything like that? Okay. And yeah, so there are people that'll benefit.
That. Yeah.
There are people that will benefit on both sides, or, you know, from either one. But that's what it comes down to.
That argument breaks down that, you know, people are paying for the golf course that don't get to enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
because we're all paying for all kinds of things we don't use.
True.
That's right.
How many citizens in this city are paying property taxes that pay for our kids to go to school? They don't have any kids in school. I mean, it just doesn't work.
But we all benefit from that, just like we benefit from the golf course. But the key is it what the residents want, and that's what it all boils down to in my mind. So
we found over how many years that we have a golf course because it's kind of what the residents want. Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are. Take.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, my turn.
Oh, way to go, Trent. Wait, this is it. This is the big moment.
Well, as a council member, I try to keep my comments pretty tame because I have another avenue where I get to address a lot of my concerns and have thoughts there. But there's a few things that kind of got hit on tonight that I would like to address. Actually, Mark did a wonderful job of most of my thoughts and most of my bullet points, so I will echo pretty much everything Mark said because he said it much more eloquently than I probably could have, given the thoughts that are running through my head right now that I want to say that I won't. 8 years ago, my wife and I drove through the Cedars West neighborhood. We were looking for a place to build a house, and we actually ended up here looking at a piece of property, and one of the very first things we noticed was that there was a golf course here, and I had just started taking up golfing. I thought it was great. So we actually started looking here more seriously than anywhere else because it was a golf course community. We liked the open space. We liked that there was a golf course close that we could play on, and that it was right next door to us, that we didn't have to drive down to Provo or Orem or go somewhere else. So one of the primary reasons, along with what was said here tonight and many others have said, is a lot of our residents did buy into Cedar Hills because it is a golf course. Whether you play golf or not, it does provide a benefit to every one of our residents. Now, there's 725 homes that immediately border the golf course that do have an impact. And I've heard time and time again, especially with the Rosegate development, that we need to listen to the residents that are closest. They have more weight because they deal with it on a day-to-day basis. Well, the residents of the Cedars, whether it's east of Canyon Road or west of Canyon Road, get ignored about the golf course all the time, and we're discredited saying that we have a bigger impact, but then when we express our feelings and say something that we believe has a big impact on us, everybody goes, shut up, we don't want to hear what you have to say, we're going to listen to the entire community. So that really needs to be addressed, that our residents in the Cedars do have a voice, and they're impacted by the golf course, just like the residents down south of Walmart would be impacted by Rosegate. So to me, I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, I'm going to listen to only those residents there by Rosegate, but I'm going to ignore the residents in the Cedars. I mean, that argument just doesn't work for me. As a city council member, I think one of my biggest responsibilities, one of my biggest duties, is to make sure that I'm using taxpayer dollars wisely. I'm responsible for every dollar that goes through the city, whether it's revenue, income, expenses, whatever you want to call it. We have five members that vote on a fairly regular basis on how to spend taxpayer dollars. In this proposal, we're saying that we're going to set aside $1 million of our taxpayer money to defend lawsuits that our residents very well could bring, whether they're frivolous or not, whether they carry weight or not. The potential is still there. And for me to go out and say, you know what, I'm going to take $1 million of taxpayer dollars to fight against our residents would be absolutely 100% irresponsible of me or any other council member on this council to spend your tax dollars in that way. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Trent.
Well, we have a lot of work ahead of us now. I think the legal FAQ is our number one priority coming this forward. Does everybody agree? I think this week we can begin to put together. This is where committees get difficult. You know what I mean? Where if one individual could take this document and put it together, it could go pretty quick. As a committee, it's going to be pretty difficult. Do we have any suggestions or ideas on how we proceed going forward now to produce the legal FAQ sheet?
I volunteer to help do that.
Okay. I think as long as there's oversight, Rob, would you have a problem with that?
And I'd like to volunteer to help with it too.
Okay. Well, I'd like to volunteer to help with it too.
Okay. We
could probably all contribute.
I think so. Do you want to, David, would you take on this assignment? Would you, at least I would ask if we can do that. Would you put together an outline of what you think the FAQ issues should be in order? And then submit those in email to the rest of the committee for approval. Did anybody second that? Yeah, we have four editing, however you want to put it.
I could start the basis of it and the committee can abolish my efforts.
At the very least, an outline would be helpful. And then if we need to, we can adjust and then we can start, that can go quickly and then we can start filling it out and then making our additions as we go. Anybody second that?
I'll
second. Okay. They all agree? Okay.
David, you all right?
Sure.
Good.
I won't be tomorrow.
No, it's fine. Is Charles here by any chance, or is he home? Charles, how you doing, brother? You see you awake, my friend?
Yes.
This is where you get your moment. This is good. Would you help us with the an outline of the financial FAQ?
Yes. I will be going on the experience.
It's all right. That's good. And then we'll do the same thing. Just submit the outline and allow members to look and see.
He just needs to get permission from his boss.
Okay.
Mr. Brown. Assuming he gives that, he can do it.
Okay. If you don't get permission, we'll change.
Is that spreadsheet that was provided to maybe a few weeks back, not a paper copy of that that you created and handed out, is that something digital format that you feel comfortable as a starting point for?
So I sent that out, and I also sent out some sample questions. I think I only talked to Rob about it, really. So, yeah, I think I might have emailed it to everyone. So
was that the second meeting?
Yeah,
that was actually very helpful. We have electronic copy of that.
Yes, and so I can send that out again with some questions, and then you guys, I think you guys have to really come up with the outline.
I'm just looking for the data to use an outline. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
So I have a suggestion.
I can email it to you.
Go ahead, Mark. What's your suggestion?
So I have the spreadsheets and the PowerPoint presentation from the last time the Golf Course Committee put that together. I suggest we just use those documents, same format, extend them out for the years for which we have audited financials, And that could be part of, I think that makes sense to be part of what we present to citizens.
So one of the pages that I provided you had that already extended out. But you have to realize that there's been a lot of changes in just the way we do operations, the way, and it has those exceptions listed below. So I couldn't, you know, I follow that format, but there are some.
You couldn't retroactively apply a lot of things.
No, but we can't. I'd like to find a way to graphically represent them.
We can do it. Yeah.
Because, for instance, you're talking about how the utilities have changed now, right? And,
yes.
And how the
now,
numbers are.
Yes. For comparability purposes, 10 years ago, we didn't charge as much for water. 10 years ago, we didn't pay the same tax amount. There's just different things out there that if you're trying to make it as apples to apples as possible, there's different things that you could adjust it by, and it's up to you whether you think it's valid. But you really need to, as citizens, decide what's appropriate. But I kind of try to stay with that format that you used, but I also wanted to give you some insight on why some numbers have changed, whether some earlier years we had event rentals like the Sunset Room in there. Now it's there. The rentals are not included in that. So
it may just be sufficient to note that they have changed. This is why they've changed.
Yeah.
Than try to retroactively apply things.
And
so it's all in the spreadsheet, and there's notes at the bottom. Rob's looked at it, and he's asked me questions. If there's anything that you don't feel comfortable with that I did, then we can discuss that. But I think it's already all there.
I do have a suggestion that may or may not be controversial, and that is I know that our conclusions at the end of our last Golf Course Finance Committee meeting, we considered as part of the process of making the golf course profitable rentals in the Sunset Room. And I feel like somehow, somewhere that ought to be reflected. I know a lot of citizens were looking to that at the time and saying, oh, well, we can offset costs this or that. And so I don't want anybody to look at it and say, hey, you're hiding numbers here, but I also want to make sure that that number is on the list somewhere and reflected,
so,
because there is an expectation from many citizens that it is.
I would just make a question about that. Say, how much would the events here offset the subsidy or whatever, and then respond per year? There was the first year it was created, it was actually a loss, so we've shown improvement each year.
Right.
So, just make a question about it and then answer it.
I think that's a good idea. Everybody agree with that?
The readers can decide for themselves whether they want to accept that portion of our report. They can say, I don't believe this should be included. This report is part.
And as long as the cost of the building is each included, we can assume X amount was spent on building that, and we get X amount profit.
We can add another question that addresses that, if that's an issue.
So, Rick, is our end goal still to produce this FAQ, to have a town hall meeting, to present the legal aspects, the financial aspects, and you know even the social issues
that we
can address?
I think we'll address all and have a longer and more thorough, hopefully, citizen interaction, allow them to ask questions and answer, just like we did last time.
And as far as a formal recommendation to the city council, is that our plan? And
that's the plan.
And if we are going to have a town hall meeting, is it something that we should project out and have a date for, and so we can at least have that goal and try to get everything done?
I'd turn that over to the mayor to consider, I suppose.
In conjunction with that, is there a reason that we should meet in between now and that town hall meeting?
I think we'll need to meet.
We would need to meet
at some point. Again, once it gets down to getting this, should we go 2 weeks again? You guys good with that?
Give us time to actually.
And I guarantee between now and then, something will come up and we'll want to talk about it.
I'll have my efforts done prior to 2 weeks.
Thank you. That's good. You know, and I assume, Rob, that you can refine and edit and put that for the appendix that we'll be putting in as well at the same time. All right. Well, I propose that we conclude this meeting. Anybody?
Seconded.
Do I need to take a vote?
Just say all those in favor.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Done.
Any opposed?
Any opposed? Gary, are you going to say no? Thank you. That's why I'm not going to be the mayor. I can't get this thing done. All right, Rob, I'm going on a fast from Facebook. I will not. I'm not. Well, you can decide what you want to, but I'm regardless. I'm done until.